Yes, good morning. Good morning, dear listeners. Welcome to Early Morning Scoop. Let us thank Matthias Sangala and Tate John for that very interesting conversation. Very, very interesting conversation. It's content based. And, you know, it's time for Early Morning Scoop. It's time for our economic conversation, our program. But before we go there, you know, just want to pick up some of the few, you know, comments, and also, input, particularly from, the conversation of Matthias Sangala and, Tate John. You know, one of the things is that, you know, emancipate yourself from mental slavery. And it's always very important to make sure that, we rethink about things that we were taught. If these things are productive to ourselves as Africans, are they productive to our present and our also future? And, the other thing is also that, what is so important? Is it entertainment or the economy of the country? Is it entertainment or the economy of the country? Why we are so amazed by music, movies, dancing around, but when it's coming to discussion about property, how to own properties, how to own mining license, for example, how to own fishing quotas, how to invest, discussion of stock exchange, we don't enter there. What is wrong with us Africans? What is the difference between what is necessary and also what is, you know, short-term, happiness? And the other thing also that we need to look at, it is a critical question that we need to ask. To say, when you talk about Africa, for example, just start with Namibia. How many factories do we have in comparison to numbers of churches that we have? And are we really solving the problem? Okay, how many churches do we have in Namibia in comparison to factories? And it's up to you to go and think. It's up to you to go and think, and also up to you to see how other countries developed. If we are praying about ending of poverty, what are we doing about it? What are we doing about it? And the other thing is also that as a human being, what is so important? Is it very important to live life here on earth? Or you think about, you know, after death, every day you think about, you know, life beyond what you have. So, but my observation is that, you know, this is the land that we are given, and it's here that you have to enjoy yourself and also to do what is necessary. And after that, the spiritual part will take care of that. But it's always very important to have a purpose and also to rethink. And these are some of the conversations that we really need to have, to say what is so important, what is helping us, what can we learn from history. And that is the only way to say, is the education which I got good for me, or just education for the sake of manipulating me? Is education which I got allowing me to think and also to develop my country? Whose intention, whose purpose are you serving? So those are some of the questions that you need to ask yourself. But I just got some of this point from the very interesting conversation. Very interesting conversation. Because if something is not challenging your line of thinking, you are not growing. If something is not challenging your line of thinking, you are not growing. There are people who are scared of thinking. Africans, we are scared of thinking. Because those time when I remember, I used to ask questions. Me and my mom used to teach me a lot about Bible. Then I asked difficult question, and she couldn't give me some of the answers, and say, no, don't ask that question. You'll be beaten by a big hammer from somewhere. But just to say, critical thinking must be encouraged, and children must be taught critical thinking rather than trying to make them what is not possible. So, dear listeners, you are listening to Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And this is your economic conversational program that is running from 6 until the hour of 8. And this is where we discuss economic matters. That is where we discuss issues of business, issues of development, and also bringing about thought-provoking questions that we are able to go back and sit and also ask ourselves, that for the past 20 years, over the past 30 years, what have we been doing is the formula that we have been using productive? Why are we keep repeating the same thing for many years, but no results are coming out? So this is the conversation. These are some of the conversation that we're having at this business and at this early morning scoop. We discuss business. We discuss, economic affairs, and we discuss issues of trade. We discuss, issues of SME development, and we discuss issues of total development, which is not only economic, which is not only infrastructure, but human development. And when you talk about human development, we talk about the aspect of having the basic needs, being happy about the future, being happy about the living, and also human development, where human is an independent thinker who will be able to evaluate on his own, be able to have a quality education, not only mainstream education, but a quality education which encourage critical thinking, encourage innovation, education which is productive, not only for acquiring or obtaining qualifications, but education which is productive and able to bring about tangible outcomes which can assist the Namibian person. So, and like we're always saying, this is not one directed conversation. You are the owner of this program. You are the owner of this program. That's why we're always making sure that after every conversation that we bring about, we open the line so that you can be able to air your opinion, air your views, give your contribution, and also see to what extent are we going to contribute to the development of our country, how can we improve the lives of our people, and also how can we analyze issues, because education need contribution, various views. It could be that you have better knowledge about a certain issue. It could be that you even work for 30 years, even 40 years about the topic that we are discussing. That's why we are always making sure that when we bring about these conversations, we want your input, we want your views, and we also want your constructive criticism. Because you don't necessarily need to agree with everything. You criticize with an alternative to say, no, David, what you are saying is not right. Or is right to such extent. However, this is how I look at it from my perspective. And it could be right when you do it this way. Or there is a new and a better and fast way on how to deal with that situation. And you are the right person that we are looking for. That's why we are always very happy when you are interacting with us. We are always very happy when we are having this conversation, particularly conversation of economics, conversation of development, and also conversation which encourage critical thinking and also productive thinking. Because, you know, there are things, I don't want to repeat or to dilute what have been said between Madia Sangara and Tade John. Don't want to distort that, but real solutions to African problems is within Africans. The solutions to our problems are within. The moment we understand that, then it's easier for us to plan ahead. Because if we continue doing what we've been doing for the past 200 years or so, we thought people from outside were going to help us, but little did we know that they were here to help themselves. So that's why the moment we come to the point to say the solutions to African problems have to come from Africans. The solution to your problem that you have now, 80% of the solutions have to come from you. You have to initiate that. Yeah, that's why when we bring about these conversations, it's always good. It's always good to reference on economic theories. It's always good to reference on political theories and philosophy. It's a foundation of documented knowledge. But that is not all. Because knowledge existed. Humans existed for a very long time. There are those which are documented, which is called now former. And we also have our education system that we have been using, but the content of the matter is the solutions of our economic problem, the solutions of the problems that we are facing in most cases are within us. The moment we understand that, yes, it's good to be a believer, but it's also good to be a realist. Understand what is real and what is not real. And also understand that for you to be a productive person, you don't need to be at church 24/7. Okay, go on Sunday, which is fine. But you are there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. Where do you get time to think? Where do you get time to innovate? Where do you get time to work on the land that you are given? So yeah, those are some of the questions. However, before we go to what we have for today, it's always very important to make sure that you follow us at all our social media platform, Eagle FM Namibia. Follow us on Facebook, follow us on X, follow us on Instagram, and also, follow us on LinkedIn. When you do that, you get the luxury of, receiving updates about economy, updates on, international trade, updates of, on, international relations, updates on global affairs, updates on food securities, SME development, financial inclusion, financial sector, a financial system, actually, Namibia financial system, GDP growth. You've got statistical analysis, you've got issues of mining, issues of gas and oil, and all trading, economic, and developmental aspects, you get access to them. So follow us in our social media platform, like our page, share our page. The moment you do that, you also assist others who follow you to follow us. Then they will be able also to be updated and given statistical and also economic information. On top of that, we also have an e-paper. We have an e-paper that is, of course, the Villager newspaper. That is your economic e-paper, which is coming out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can only subscribe, like the page of the Villager newspaper, share that page. And the other easier way to get a copy of the Villager newspaper every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning, send your name to this number, 081-241-44. Save that number to your WhatsApp, and also you will be able to receive the Villager newspaper every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we are always encouraging, especially the students of economics, researchers, academicians, policymakers, business people, farmers, make sure that you have access to the Villager newspaper. Make sure that you have access to the Villager newspaper, because that is where you get direction from. That is where you get tips. That is where you get stories, references, and also that is where you get what is coming up, what is happening around farming in Namibia, what is happening up around livestock, what are the statistics saying, what is missing in a Namibian farming sector. How can you fill that gap? And also, if you are in academia, it's always very important to make sure that you have references, and when you use the Villager newspaper, it can be your reference note, and it can also be the point where you are getting direction on how to get more sources. Because when you get that tip, then it's your point of departure as a researcher, as a student, and also as a business person. If you are an SME operator, using the Villager newspaper will be great for you, because you have economic insight, you have economic intelligence, and you will be able to be that person who make those long-term economic and business decisions. And when you have access to information, it's easier for you to move forward, and it's also easier for you to avoid unnecessary investment, and also to avoid entering in business territories that you will not fit in. So do that, and you can also talk to our marketing team. Talk to Meme Monica, so that you can advertise with us, at the Villager newspaper. And also you can buy airtime, because we are always telling you to stay with our coverage, with our economic and developmental enthusiast. There is a lot of potential customers that you'll be able to get. So we are always indicating you to, that money invested in advertisement is money on the way to come to the owner. So money invested in advertisement is money yet to come. So advertise with us, and it's going to be easier for you to access or get your potential customers, get your clients, and also access a broader range of clients. Because in a digital world, when the Villager newspaper is coming out, it's not only you who is in Namibia, because it's a digital platform. You can have access to digital format wherever you find yourself. That's why you have the luxury of expanding your wings as a business. So do that, and it'll be easier for you. So, and the other thing is also that, you know, in the world of digitalization, we have Eagle FM app. We have Eagle FM app. That is an app that you can have access to. You can just go to your Play Store, go to your phone, go to your Play Store, App Store, download the Eagle FM app, and you listen to the programs which are on air, and you can also be able to listen to the podcast. The other thing, that you look at is also that, in a situation that you are not able to download, an app, or you are finding it very difficult, you can also follow us online. You can also, just type in Eagle FM, just go to Google, type in Eagle FM, then you press home, then you listen to the program which are on air. Then you can also have access to the podcast. That is your open archive. In a situation that when that program was on air and you just miss it, or you were busy doing something, you can also go back and listen, educate yourself, and also be able to understand what is happening around you, and also what are the new development. Last, before we go to what we have on the table, so that we have Imba app. Imba app is a digital version of a hymn book. That is your Ehangano in Oshiwambo, Oshierero, Maimburiro. You have Afrikaans, Silozi, and many other local Namibian languages. So in a situation that you don't have a hard copy hymn book, and you are required to use a hymn book, whether you are at church, you are at a graduation party, you are called at an event that you need to give advice, and also to sing from a hymn book, do not scratch your head. Don't scratch your head, because we got you. We got you in the context that you will be able to access that hymn book in various Namibian languages just by downloading Imba app. So dear listeners, for those of you who are coming on the radio for the first time, you are listening to Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And just before we go to what we have on the table, I'm going to have a guest today. I'm going to have a guest who will discuss about disaster and risk management, and also indigenous knowledge. And it's very crucial for you to stay tuned. And we are here until the hour of, eight. So, let us look at paying the bills, then we can come back to you.
Omapenda furegetu oganyanyere omore kojero manguruko monina agasimane kaihe pakunyanyera onjira dagaminwa ninga ehogororo jupenda ngabeka ondapo omatayera nagapame nomadira adira ogaera nongere tohingi waliko kiyodungo imangeramo etokara watonata ongwe omutona terigonjo konona yawo esikundika jomapenda fure omahogororo goye nageerekere upenda wawo kara ependa jasha siku ninga shoka shomojira etokupitha omwenyo.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Peace.
I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate.
Yes, let us start with what is happening in Japan. We understand that African leaders are gathered in Japan attending TICAD, Tokyo International Conference on African Development. And it stated that, Japan seek a bigger role in Africa. Japan seek to expand the participation or integration or working together with Africa. And these are some of the words which were given by Prime Minister of Japan, especially when addressing the African leaders who are gathered in Japan at Yokohama. And it's very interesting. It's very interesting also to see economic alignment. How is this economic game plan going to be implemented, especially from Japan? And it's also very interesting also to see that everybody is looking at Africa. And the question that we need to ask ourselves is that when Japan seek bigger role in Africa, what is Africa seeking? What is Africa seeking? That is the question that we need to ask ourselves. What is Africa seeking? And is this going only to benefit Japan or also African people and also African people? Those are some of the questions that we need to ask ourselves, because we are talking about critically analyzing issues. Because it happened. China is here in Namibia. China is one of a global economic power player, not only in Africa, but around the world. But the question that you are asking yourself is that, what are we getting? What is so new from this? What is so new from this? What is in Africa that Japan seek to expand? And how can we work together with Japan? And just before we play that, I think it's very crucial also. It's also very crucial to look at what are some of the talking points. What are some of the talking points, especially from the position of Namibia? What are some of the talking points, especially from the position of Namibia, when it comes to the high level delegation? When it comes to the high level delegation, which is led by Prime Minister. That is Irian Gurare, and also the Minister of International Relations and Trade, that is Ambassador Musavi. Some of the talking points that Namibia stood with is that just going to read part of the document which I have here. Prime Minister's talking points to say Namibia recently launched its 6th National Development Plan, which include blue economy, outline strategies and method to be used to achieve goals over the next 5 years in Namibia. Our blue economy encompasses include fisheries, aquaculture, transport, logistics, mining, water, sanitation, as well as tourism. And the other thing is also Namibia is of the view that it is important that through TICAD we can place greater emphasis on strengthening continental value chain across all sectors, mostly especially agriculture, mining sector, which are strategically important to our continent. Through focused efforts, we can scale up manufacturing, industrial development priorities, if we are to develop and grow our local economies. Now, these are some of the very interesting points. Some of the very interesting points. And just before we come back to this, let us, listen to this news of, African Summit, African leaders at TICAD, at Tokyo International Conference on African Development.
Japan's Prime Minister Shigeru Shiba has opened a three-day summit with nearly 50 African leaders, pledging deeper economic and strategic ties as Tokyo looks to counterbalance waning U.S. engagement and China's expanding footprint on the continent. The gathering, part of the Tokyo International Conference on African Development, TICAD, brings together heads of states, ministers and global officials, including UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Shiba is expected to unveil a new Indo-Pacific African cooperation framework, linking government agencies, industries and experts to expand free trade and investment. Central to this vision is the Indian Ocean African Economic Zone Initiative, designed to channel Japan's business activity from India and the Middle East into African markets.
Japan is trying to expand strategic, interest in Africa, to expand particularly in terms of trade. And, when you look at this picture, see our African leaders, they're outside and they're very happy. See William Ruto there, see Ramaphosa, see also the chairperson of African Union. They are very happy. They are very happy and they are discussing about African problems. And not to discourage is a good thing to have global partners. But it's also a good thing to have global partners that we understand that they do not need to do everything for us. But we need to get real skills. We need to get real methodologies that we can also use on our own. Now, let me take you to the points that were raised. Let me take you to the points that were raised by our Prime Minister as head of delegation at the International Forum. Yesterday I just attended a very, very interesting, very, very interesting, presentation on Namibian economy. By Robin Sherbourne, one of the known economists and the author of Guide to Namibian Economy. And he stated something which is, very interesting, very, very interesting to say, Namibian economy is very difficult to understand. It's very interesting, but very difficult to understand. He say, give an example of a mysterious woman who, you don't really understand her, but you like her. She's a bit dangerous, but, you still want to know more about her, and there's always new things coming up. And, it was very interesting also to have an opening remarks describing Namibian economy to a beautiful woman who is mysterious, very difficult to understand, but you still want to know more about her. And what this is saying is that Namibian economy is very complicated. It's very complicated, with full of opportunities, with full of opportunities, but also difficult to manage based on the history and also based on the current situation. Now, looking at, let's put it this way. Looking at the points that, for example, are talking points of our Prime Minister at international fora, that is Tokyo International Conference on African Development, particularly when it's coming to mineral beneficiation. One of the things that was mentioned in that presentation, and is making sense, is to I think it's not far from what we've been discussing at this platform, because he indicated that when you talk about mineral beneficiation, it's a good thing, but what are the progress that have been made? There is little to less progress when it's coming to mineral beneficiation. He gave example of mine, of diamond, for example. The only value that we add to diamond is polishing. It's polishing and cutting. Uranium. He gave an example of us transporting, uranium as a yellow cake. But that is not value addition. Gold. We are not doing anything. Gold refineries are in South Africa. And he spoke about also copper. He spoke about lead, we add nothing to lead. To tin, we add nothing. To iron. With iron, he spoke about a new development that is at, green, hydrogen or Oshivera project. And he also spoke about cement. And also salt, to say, salt is the only, maybe some final products that we are exporting outside. But when you talk about mineral beneficiation, and the point which is also making sense is that, the following mines are under care and maintenance. Talk about Namib lead, zinc, talk about Trenkop, uranium, talk about, Ochihaze copper, scorpion, zinc. And that is according to Chambers of Mines. And the question also that we also need to ask ourselves is that, is it very important? Is it, what is so important? Is it giving a political statement which is ambitious, or giving effect? Because mineral beneficiation is not something which is impossible, or ending value is not something which is impossible. But looking at where we are now and where we are going, are we going to achieve these things if we have a situation like this? And there's a lot of interesting presentation, and I think I have to share with you this, because there's a new website on Namibian economy that you can access to, especially as Namibians that, we do not like reading. We can access to latest documents on finance, previous budgets, publications, documents on governance, SOEs. If you are a researcher, I think it's very important for you to use such a website. Let's go and pay the bills, then we can continue.
Stock up for August with real value at WB. Get a 2-liter Pepsi now for a sweet $14.99. 750ml WB cooking oil for only $26.99. 1 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for just $36.99. And 50 High Baby active diapers at only $124.99. See all our real value deals at www.vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Who are are we, you ask? The National Road Safety Council is a statutory body established in 1996 with a legal mandate to promote and manage road safety across Namibia. We believe every accident is preventable and every life is precious. Our mission is to make our roads, vehicles, and users safer based on effective road safety management. So, join our unwavering vision and commitment to zero deaths and serious injuries. Visit www.nisc.org.na to learn more. Do the right thing and save lives.
Great news.
Yeah, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at Namibian economy. We are looking at development. What can we do? Where are we? And, you know, what are some of the reality on the ground that we need to work on? And the prediction of getting the first oil is estimated to be in 2035. The question is that how are we going to move? What are you going to do in this in between 10 years? Are we still going to continue planning, or we are still going to, you know, there is something that we are going to do? And the other thing also which was mentioned, and I understand it to say, when you talk about discoveries of oil, that is in Namibia, talk about discoveries of oil, and the economist has brought his own opinion, and it's not my opinion, he a bit criticized, you know, putting off oil under the presidency, which he thought it would a bit scare the investors. And there's also a bit of, you know, unclear functionalities of roles. Because when you look at the Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy, you still have a Petroleum Commissioner there. Then you have upstream unit with special advisors and the coordination there. And also the framework that need to be revised, particularly when it's coming to oil industry. The economist questions to say some of these, policies, they take more than 4 years. How are we going to navigate from there? And the investors cannot wait. And it's something to debate about. It's something to ask questions. But it's also, and I also have different views, especially regarding to the presentation. The presentation which was presented yesterday, I love it very much. But I also have a problem, because when we are bringing about this discussion, we don't only open up for criticizing, but we bring about these discussions to make sure that at least we have solutions. Because if I'm just standing here, then I poke holes in everything which green hydrogen is doing, with everything which oil industry is doing, then I'm not helping. But the question is, how can we solve this problem? How can we fill the holes? Because, you know, the problem that we have in Namibia, when I find you doing something, then I say, Chief, what you are doing is good, but you will not reach there because we have a loophole here. Then you start, oh, you are a backstabber, you are not progressive, you are an enemy, and all the political words. But instead of saying no, okay, you found a mistake in the policy framework on how to deal with our oil, what is an alternative? Because we all want solutions. We all want solutions. And it's also very interesting also to see that now, when you look at, for example, Swapo Party manifesto and implementation plan, it was a bit silent on green hydrogen. But when you look at NDP6, because of the involvement and development, where you also see green hydrogen being mentioned, but it's a very good thing to see that there are some changes which have been seen to say, there will be, outcomes from this. But the critical thing that we need to do as Namibians is that we are scared of being criticized, and we are always on defensive mode. That's why we are not That's why we are not moving. That's why we are not moving. That's why we need to bring about that culture of saying open criticism, but also with solutions. Because I also do not like analysts who just give perspective about the issues, but there's no solutions. Because if you are economic analyst, if you are political analyst, analyze the situation, then provide an alternative. Maybe a recommendation, if they are not used that time, they will be used one day. So those are some of the things. But the topic for today that we have, topic for today is based on disaster risk management, particularly related to response to climate change or the impact of climate in Namibia. How are Namibians dealing with issues of drought? How are Namibians dealing with issues of flood? And also we also touch on the aspect of inequality and also victims of climate change impacts. And also what is also very important is also that when you speak about issues such as drought, when you speak about drought, then you talk about who is responsible to respond to that. In most cases, is the office of the Prime Minister and office of the Prime Minister and with disaster risk management, department, which is not only at the national, it's also at the regional and at the constituency level. Then one of the questions which was asked, especially when it's coming to capacity building events on disaster risk management at the International University of Management, is that why can't we move away from the response to prevention? Because every time we are just expecting, okay, if there is flood, there is food which is going to come from the office of the prime ministers, from donors around the world. But why can't we prevent that? Why can't we prevent that? Why every time if there is flood in Windhoek, it's only our Gambashus which are under the water? So, let's take the caller. Hello, sir.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Doing great.
Hmm.
Is this the engagement of environmental and what is this?
Yeah, disaster risk management, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's a platform.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No, I would also like to say something.
Okay, okay.
Yes, my point will be on, I think it should be an awareness that has to be taught in schools.
Yes.
Hence, the only way we can win this. My point is where on people have to respect the environment itself. Whereby when everyone buys something,
yeah,
and then they see that it's not usable or it's not of use to them, they don't just throw it in the environment like that. You look for a perfect place where one can dispose it of.
Yeah.
And some of the things are non-biodegradable.
So now, what do we need to do? We need to start teaching these things at school. We are taught these things at school. Maybe it's not, the emphasis was not really put there.
We were taught these things at school, but not at an earlier age. Yeah, it's not at a very tender age. And to put it at a proper strength.
Yeah.
Our parents.
Yeah.
Once our parents were not taught about it, or it was not really strengthening their brain.
Now you are talking the right point, because the guest who is going to speak now is also going to speak about indigenous knowledge. How did our elders deal with issues of climate, issues of environment? Even he will speak on issues. Even when people are going to hunt, they know that even if I cannot kill the bull or a pregnant animal.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Because it's for the future. We are going to, I think it's a very interesting point that you bring about, especially when you start with parents. But some of the parents, a long time ago, they knew how to deal with the environment. They knew how to protect the environment. That's why we still have some of the remaining species of either plants or animals.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Let me be honest with you. All the rural areas.
Yes.
If you go to the rural areas, people are still slaughtering bears. Even during a moment where someone really knows that this is the moment where bears or wild animals are busy nesting. Someone would go definitely try and put some mahangu seeds around a certain place, or they will make what is this? Where we go under certain bushes where you put up proper cassette, and then that's when you can hunt some of these birds.
A proper ambush.
a proper ambush. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean. Someone knowingly that yes, the truth is there will be a moment where birds are busy nesting their eggs.
Yeah.
Now,
I want to ask because it's a conversation that we must have. Ne? Let us look at it this way: is the issue of inequality also part of damaging the environment? Because if I really do not have anything to eat and I see a rabbit, especially at the rural area, it will force me to do those things, even if, you know, cases
the truth,
that...
The truth is, a rabbit will not make you quench your anger. A bird, a single dove that you are fighting, apparently, to go. Some people are even taking out these short rifles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen worse. I'm in an area where... I'm in Ohangwena region.
So now, what is the, because when you are at that area, particularly Hangwena region, you guys are blessed, especially when it's coming to forest and also a lot of vegetation there. People try to cut trees, but they are still standing. There was a point I was in Nana, I think 2024, but I've seen that a lot of trees are still standing.
Nana, you are even near there. You must go up to
Okomo. No, I was at Ushiro. Yeah. I was at Ushiro. Now, what do you think need to be done to make sure that those generations who will come after even 100 years, they will still come to Ushiro, Congo, and say that, no, this is where our uncles used to hunt, and they preserve this. What do you think need to be done? Because if you are not careful, we are going to lose all these things.
What has to be done, I think, let me talk of a point where I think the government itself, starting from the governors.
Yeah.
The governor need to reinforce this into their councils. Because it's the only way it will be like an awareness, a proper one. There are people who are still stubborn. Carbon in an instance that no, I'm not seeing a conservation officer, so I don't care. I will go out there in the wild and do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing that by saying that you are affecting yourself, the impact you are putting on the environment, it's not just going to impact you or impact someone that is next to you for 2-10 years. No, it's an impact that has affected someone in the generation.
So
what has to really be done is now that we have got constituencies, it's about time we reinforce conservation officers to start also going those constituencies, going to schools, not just to wait at the roadblock or not just to come at an area when they've heard, no, there is someone that is doing this and that. No, conservation officers should be reinforced into schools.
Mm-hmm.
They should start from schools. They should go to schools with their uniform. They should present themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They should be there standing there wrong. I am standing here in the shoes of the life that we want to see.
Yeah. And the issue of using especially trees for building materials, what do you think is a better way? Do this policy apply to say cut one and plant 10? Do we see people doing that?
To be honest with you, like, you know, in Oshikunde,
yeah,
small village called Namasila.
Yeah.
No. You see, they always say, hence that they are poor. Apparently, one cannot even afford a zinc.
But you can afford an X number four to cut.
Number four is even 800 and something in total.
Yeah.
To be honest, when I came here 2018, I was so shocked by a house where I could not even see a zinc. Just, I was very shocked, my brother. And then when I, hence when they started seeing a clinic being built nearby, that's when one of the girls started working in the clinic, and then later on she bought zinc. But still, there are rooms in that house still erected with laws.
Okay. Now let us look at issues such as flood. And also issues such as, because we have engineers who do not want to be taught. You come to a village, a headman is telling you to say, you know, that is Oshana. But they're saying, no, I study civil engineering, we can build what, and all the, you know, there's always a contradiction between, you know, those who went to school and those who know the environment very well. One of the tested plans, or one of the tested town planning, system was Oshakati, where people, they are building house in Oshana, and elders are telling them to say, no, we have been here for a long time. This is Oshana. I say, no, ma'am, this is what we do. But every time we see in news when there's flood, people are being, you know, taken from that place to another place due to situation in which they find themselves. But how do we build that relationship between those who went to school, study environment, and also those who have indigenous knowledge?
Okay. They will have to bring in a lot of whole thing now. There's always a statement that is on national radio whereby it says, the young parents that young parents that
you are cutting a little bit, Nate. Just remain still.
Okay, let me just go back to my spot.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you properly.
Okay, now the older parents that we find at their places that they know. Ask young ones that come there by saying, no, I come with the knowledge of academic.
Yeah.
It has to be a hand that washes another hand, and then the other one wash the other hand. Whereby respect has to be involved. Official.
Okay, still again, you are still cutting?
Officials of the government have to be there also. They have to be involved. Mm-hmm. Not just to send engineers out there on their own. No.
Mm-hmm.
Officials of government to be there, involved. I like the style of Mr. Kasindi, the governor of Oshkoto. Whenever there is something that is pertaining to government issues or pertaining to people, to the nation, he's also involved with the officials. They listen to him, and then when they see him, they see that, yes, we are also being represented.
No, that is a good approach to leadership. So thank you for your input. Who are we speaking to?
You are speaking to Mario. I was a classmate with Sion.
Okay. We are going to engage him now. I think just stay on your radio, ne?
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I see the understanding. I see.
I was I think he stole my career.
No, he's listening.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Yes. Let us look at the conversation with Dr. Sio Nikera. Dr. Sio Nikera is dean at the Faculty of Environmental Science and Sustainability. Environmental Management and Sustainability Science at International University of Management. You know, yesterday they had a very interesting, you know, workshop regarding capacity building on disaster risk management and also indigenous knowledge and how people use indigenous knowledge, or the knowledge that have been there to make sure that, you know, they deal with issues of natural disasters. We used to hear people used to go and get rain. We also used to see, to hear people when you don't want it to rain, you put salt at the stove, whether it's working or it's not working, but it has worked with a lot of people. What is the science behind it? Those are some of the knowledge that were never documented, but he's going to make some clarification based on that. And yeah, stay tuned. We are here until the hour of 8. Yes, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at issues of economic development and also issue which affect the bread and butter issue. Yeah, our focus or other point, we are going to look at the capacity building workshop, which was hosted or held at the International University of Management in collaboration with African Institute in Indigenous from South Africa. And the capacity building program look at various areas, particularly in disaster risk management. However, for me to help me and unpack this, I got into the conversation with the Dean for Environmental Management and the Sustainability Sciences from International University of Management. That is, of course, Dr. Sion Ikera, to help us unpack this. Dr. Sion, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Yes, Dr. Ikera, let us start with the background of this capacity building workshop. What is the background of this capacity building workshop, and what is the importance of this one, especially when it's coming to disaster risk reduction and also management in Namibia?
Thank you very much, Anger FM, for always making time to engage your key stakeholders. We don't take this opportunity for granted, because information dissemination is very, very important. IUM, together with University of KwaZulu-Natal, which hold that Institute of Indigenous Knowledge at African level, we organized this capacity building workshop. To actually first create awareness and also share knowledge on how to respond to issue of disasters, because recently you would always hear issue of drought, issue of flood, issue of some flood fire. So We realize that we need to actually engage as universities and also stakeholders, especially those at the grassroots level. That's why in this workshop, there are also some stakeholders that comes from the region, because they are the ones that are actually dealing with this issue of disasters. Then the training also involve issue of indigenous knowledge, actually this, you know, the knowledge that we learn from our parents, from our elders, because we realize that for us to properly respond to or deal with the issue of disasters, we need to incorporate indigenous knowledge, because indigenous knowledge are area specific. And if people actually use those indigenous knowledge, they will be able to deal with the issue of disaster risk management in terms of preparedness, especially preparedness, because there are always warnings there in, yeah. in nature
yeah.
that actually, or signs that yeah. can give you an idea of what is likely to happen.
Yeah, it's very interesting, especially when you spoke about indigenous knowledge. And maybe as it has been the case a long time ago, where people have been using different signs or those undocumented knowledge, how do you think this will be incorporated in mainstream academia and also in, you know, respond to issues of climate, particularly the strategies which have been used? And in most cases, they've been seen as backward, but working for those who, by that time, we did not even know science.
Yeah, the people are actually using some of the constraints when it comes to indigenous knowledge, that they are not documented, they are area specific, they cannot be tested, and all of that.
Yeah.
But I would like to state it that this indigenous knowledge are tested. If you check how people apply salt, momihoka, when they cook,
yeah,
they usually test and can tell that now the salt is enough, or we can add. When the elderly people are preparing the seeds for the next season, they would look at the grains and know that this is the correct seed to use for next season when they are again going to cultivate.
Yeah, yeah.
So, in a way, yes, it might be limitation, but, what we need to do now is to have these things documented. Of course, institution of higher learning have a role to play here.
Yeah.
At IUM, we are already teaching indigenous knowledge.
Okay.
Especially in our faculty, most of the qualification, the indigenous knowledge is there as a subject. Now, it's very important that we incorporate this indigenous knowledge in our plans, in our program, in our framework, because, as I said, one of the limitations there is the so-called area-specific. Now, if you incorporate this, which is area-specific, I can tell you this will be able to speak to the people that are in that are from that area, because they are the ones that are practicing this indigenous knowledge, and for them, it's working. Because you go to some areas, for example, they will tell you, if that Oshana can keep water, you know, the first flush, usually come either toward the end of October or beginning of November. They would say, if that Oshana keep water after that flush, it's not going to be a good rainy season coming. So then already people from that area are prepared depending on what they have observed in their surrounding. And we just need to appreciate that, yes, it's true, it's area specific, but it can be considered in terms of dealing with disaster risk management.
No, that is very interesting. And if indigenous knowledge have assisted us for all those thousands of years, why not? Why can't we document them and also make them our own signs that can also apply, like what you have said, at area specific also?
Actually, through indigenous knowledge, indigenous people or local people lived in harmony with nature. They know when to hunt because they would allow for pregnant women to give birth. They would not kill, for example, the bull, the old bull. For example, if there is they know that
They are hunting.
Yes.
So even if it's the only one, because you are getting the generation.
Because they understand these things. You would see people that are still using these traditional hats.
Yeah.
There are those, touching glasses.
Yeah.
They would know that they would not cut those glasses immediately until the seed fall off, because they want the seeds to go and germinate and also again give the such glasses the next season.
No, that is very interesting, Doctor. And those things, I'm telling you, they are not in books yet. Or when you said you are also giving a course on that, I think it's a very interesting thing. Now let us look at climate change, climate impacts. In Namibia, especially in most cases, we only look at drought and also flood. However, there are other things also. Now, where are we? What have we done in terms of responding to this, or in terms of policy, and also in terms of, you know, preparing ourselves due to what we went through all those years. Where are we?
Yeah.
Current in Namibia.
Yeah. I will start by saying, yes, there are actually other things that can be caused by climate change,
mm-hmm.
like heat wave,
mm-hmm.
like even these things that we heard of locust that were here last, I think, I don't know whether it was last year.
Oshipahu.
Okay. Those things are all linked to many of these outbreaks, diseases and so on,
yeah.
are linked to climate change.
Mm-hmm.
I think our government have really done enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have policies and program around
mm-hmm.
Or available.
Mm-hmm.
However, mm-hmm. the implementation of these programs and plan mm-hmm. become a challenge
mm-hmm.
because our institutions are not working together.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You would see Ministry of Agriculture is running a program like this. Ministry of Environment is running a program like this.
Mm.
Ministry of Health is running a program like this. For example, malaria.
Mm-hmm.
You would see the Ministry of Gender is running a program on women.
Yeah.
And
women and climate.
Yes, and all yeah. these things. Yeah. If this effort
yeah.
was put together, yeah. and that term yeah. that we usually use in the environmental space,
mm.
Synergy,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
where efforts are synchronized
yeah.
and married,
yeah.
I think in community of property to
okay.
ensure that
yeah.
because if these things are put together,
yeah.
you will be able to actually achieve more
mm-hmm.
with less, and other resources you can use it for something else.
Mm-hmm.
But now
mm-hmm.
this NGO is doing this,
yeah.
this NGO is doing that,
yeah.
government agency is doing this,
mm-hmm.
this government agency is working with this university, is working with this NGO.
Mm-hmm.
Things are just all over.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we need to come to the table.
Mm-hmm.
and work together.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we collaborate,
yeah.
a good thing of collaboration is about skill,
mm-hmm.
it's about technology,
mm-hmm.
and also to save time.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, if everybody is doing almost the same thing, but in a different way,
mm-hmm.
it's not nice. It shows that we are disorganized. So I want us to organize ourselves
yeah.
in terms of implementing government programs that are responding to issue of drought, or to especially now we are talking about adaptation. Let's have a logical way of doing this thing, not just like everybody is doing this, everybody is this other one is doing this.
Yes, Doctor, let us, before we go to the question of inequality, while we are at collaboration, from an academic, you are a researcher, you are an academician, you are a leader in academia, and also an expert in your field. Looking at this issue of climate change, how do you view the response from other parties, either NGOs, either government, either private sector? We know there have been some moves, but how do you view, and apart from collaboration, what really need to be done to make sure that in every committee, for example, of a region, you have an academician, every committee in at a national level, so that these people can, because we all need each other. You provide data, you provide academic ground, somebody provide the policy framework.
You see, most of the talk recently,
yeah.
which I also support, is about stakeholder mapping.
So
that you know who are the concerned parties.
Yeah.
What are their wants?
Yeah.
Their needs?
Yeah.
So that when you come up with a plan,
yeah.
you are actually talking to the need and the aspiration of our people.
Mm-hmm.
If we cannot identify stakeholders
mm.
that are concerned to the programs that we are coming up with,
mm.
then we understand their interest.
Mm-hmm.
It will be difficult for us to come up with programs that will benefit our people.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, in terms of collaboration, really, I recommend that we take the exercise of stakeholder mapping seriously.
Mm.
Because when people of conflicting interest
yeah.
are all put in one program, that program will never work.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you would see you put up something in a village.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's only a small fraction of the people that really can benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Those who cannot benefit, they would come and vandalize it.
It's true.
They are saying, this thing, even if we finished our space, we used to graze here. Let's take, for example, a garden.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe through some grants, people are given a garden and they are given maybe a space by a headman.
Yeah.
And now through that, maybe proper consultation was not done. You know what it, how it would aid?
Mm-hmm.
Those who are benefiting,
mm-hmm.
they would want to maintain.
Yeah.
Those who are not benefiting, they will say, we used to graze here before. So how can somebody from somewhere, or these things that are done by corruption, we don't know where it come from, all of a sudden we just saw a big fence.
Yeah.
They will come and cut so that they go, cut the fences, wire, so that they go and graze their livestock where they usually graze.
Mm.
So therefore, it's very, very important that we, in our, in doing, coming up with program, we go back to the issue of development for the people, by the people. Let the people be the decider of their destiny.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Lastly, just your expected outcome. I know your institution is in collaboration with University of KwaZulu-Natal. Yeah. Just your expected outcome from this. Workshop, and are we expecting other workshop also in the future? Because it was very interesting to listen not only to your presentation but also to different academicians. What is the future looking like, especially when it's coming to climate change from IUM point of view?
Actually, we are going to have a recommendation in terms of policy and some action that we have to do as the two sister university.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I am seeing, the language that we are speaking there is really the issue of collaboration, working together so that we enrich ourselves in terms of data, reliable data that is. We want to see government systems that are oiled toward the issue of action before disaster.
Yeah.
Because when you have anticipatory action, you are able to reduce the cost in terms of responding to the disaster. If you have got to institution that they know their responsibility in the framework of responding to disaster, things will work proper.
Mm.
So, one of my expected outcome is that, it's a strong collaboration between our two universities, and we are also inviting other universities to come to the table.
Yeah.
Because for me,
institution
of higher learning must not compete.
Yeah, yeah.
They must complement each other.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know where these things of competition is coming from. If you see that a certain university is very advancing, work with them so that you tap from their wisdom.
Indeed,
so that you get to know how are they doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you compete unnecessarily, at the end of the day, you will create an environment which is not conducive, and you are not going to attend to issues that are affecting our people.
Yes, Dr. Sio Nikeda, thank you very much for the time. I know you have a lot of work to do, but thank you very much for the time and also availing yourself. And thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, that was the Dean of Faculty of Environmental Management and Sustainability Science at International University of Management, Dr. Sion Ikela, spoke about the value of indigenous knowledge in climate change, disaster risk management, and he quite spoke frankly, especially when it comes to issues of collaboration, not only at an institutional level, but collaborations from a grassroots level, and also in areas of policy making, to make sure that you have to go to the people and ask them what they need. You ask their input. You ask their input, then you develop a policy which is human-centered. And when it comes to issues of indigenous knowledge, issues of how to deal with climate, you know, there has been a gap. There has been a gap, especially to the knowledge that we already here and the knowledge that we brought by science, especially when it comes to issue of dealing with the weather. People knew how to measure, how to predict the weather. That's why they have been surviving for all those years. That's why now what is being tried to be harnessed and also being used as a complementary knowledge, especially when it's coming to dealing with the impact of climate change and the impact of disaster risk management and prevention. Yeah, you can engage us in the studio at 083-288-401. And the other thing that he stated is, you know, when it's coming to institutions, you know, when you look at the APRM, the African Peer Review Mechanism report on governance on Namibia, I think 2022, and the current one, which is looking at coherence of policies in South Africa, Namibia, Ghana, and Kenya. In the case study of Namibia, you'll be able to understand that recommendations did not change much. But the issue of coherence, the issue of, duplication of duties, the issue of lack of coordination between institutions remains. That is why it's very difficult to fight when you are not united. You are on your way to war and you are already fighting who is going to be the commander, who is going to be the sniper, who is going to use bombs, who is going to do what. How are you going to win that war? It's the same with economic war. It's the same with economic war or economic battle. A think tank is there to provide a research and technical knowledge, while a government is there to come up with political programs and implement those political programs. Academia will provide data and offer academic insight, while civil society will deal with people on the ground. But in what we are seeing, civil society is on the other side with their own politics. Think tanks are here sitting together. Academicians are here. Professors are just sitting with their colleagues here, their researchers. Then politicians are here who are doing double jobs. You find them, it's a technical person and it's also a politician. But that wasn't supposed to be the case. The case was supposed to be, let us coordinate and work together. Because it's an African proverb to say, if we want to go far, we have to go together. But if I want to go fast, I have to go alone. But how fast am I going? That is the question. Because there's a difference between fast and far. You can be fast for 20 seconds. Then you run, 100, meters, but we are walking 10 kilometers with colleagues because we are assisting and pushing each other. So let us look at the caller. Hello. Yes, sir. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Good morning.
Oh, the morning is fine.
Yeah, so the only issue is that for you, you talk about all kind of issues.
Hmm.
You were having a conversation with the brother there who was talking about the issue of climate change, environment, and things like that.
Yeah.
Now you are here doing now talking about the fragmentation.
No, it's the same thing when you're addressing climate change. We need all the institutions. It's the same thing that what he said.
Exactly. That's why I like his point, you know.
Uh-huh.
And your point is very important. Like I said, you are all discussing about all-round development. So it's not you talk about inclusiveness of all things.
Yeah.
But the other issue is that when those people are operating, yesterday we were talking about, they seem to be ineffective kind of a coordination mechanism.
Yeah.
And remember I told you that there are many, there could be many other coordination mechanisms. The effective ones.
Yeah.
With other institutions.
Mm.
So, but I gave you an example of the one for the Ministry of Gender.
Yeah, that one I remember.
Do you have that, the national one?
No, that one I remember, yes.
The one that even tells them that, yes, every budgetary provision or registration or any act or any other, whatever, regulation that you can talk about. So all those institutions, the stakeholders, the kind of engagement that you need to have, civic engagement, they are to be, at least their efforts. Because everybody has to address gender issue. Because they all have the youth, they all have the adults, they all have their social responsibility and economic issues to address. So now, if they have their own politics at their home there, and it's actually impacting negatively on the life of the people.
Yeah.
So you see, I always, and many a times, when people are coming in to incite instability, incite some kind of rebellion.
Yeah.
I was looking at the issue of Angola recently, and there is obviously sudden people were saying, "UNITA." I say, was this a protest? I mean, a demonstration of people viewing their thing according to the.
they're according to Dr. Savimbi.
You did not say the flag.
But
they were in front there. I don't know whether they have hijacked the demonstration that was so supposed to be peaceful, or the people used their crafty way of getting in there to incite. And oh my God, it was chaotic.
You know, UNITA is now a legitimate political party in Angola, right?
It's what?
It's a legitimate political party.
So legitimate and destroy things.
We are on the same page now. I'm just saying.
No, that one
we're on the same page. I'm also not, I'm not supporting anybody who use politics to.
I understand.
Because but
yesterday you asked the same question. Today, when you say everybody, even the non-governmental organization.
Yeah.
And all these civic organizations and many other
things. Yeah.
Men, they also have their own politics.
And it's even worse there, because a lot of people who did not make it in politics, a lot of them, they are there. No, it's true. I'm just putting it out there. It's up to you to debate. Where are they? If you run out of politics, most of them are there.
But you see, I don't know whether they put the bread. Of course, you cannot work without eating it.
Yeah.
You must have some kind of bread. But the way you get your bread is in the wrong part. It's not in the wrong way, actually, but it's your right.
Yeah.
I've got the right to associate and do all these things and things like that.
Yeah.
Democracy, even though we say it has got its own weakness, it gives you that provision.
Provision.
Mm. But then, the problem is you now become antagonistic against something that is there to support you.
Yeah.
That's why if they are not coordinated, if they are scattered, I can tell you, my brother, there must be a way of harmonizing these things. Even their activities, they must be regulated properly.
That is true. It's true.
Must really go inside there. Otherwise, So what you can see, experience in the social and the political chaotic. And they, now we are going to break the law that governs the society.
Yeah, it's true, because most of civil society, they've been labeled as critics of government. But that was not supposed to be the case. It was supposed to be a check and balance and say, if you are not doing it well in public sector, this is an alternative way. These people are supposed to work together.
Critics is fine. Critics is fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when you are criticizing
everything,
what is it? We call them constructive criticism.
Yeah, constructive criticism.
The one that's more destructive.
Yeah, it's destructive. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we put it in the right way.
Something is fine. We can analyze it. Like we are doing it now. We are treating issues. So
yeah.
It's fine. When do we improve?
Yeah.
When do we go about it? What about our governance system? The parties that are there to play,
yeah,
to contribute. How do we do it? How do we coordinate? So the collaboration is very important. All I'm saying is that even when you have the effect of climate change,
yeah,
in the environment,
yeah,
but it's for us now to take up an opportunity.
I hear you.
So because, so it is all for us now to take up opportunity and say, why? This about this, smart climate, this smart agriculture, climate change strategy, or whatever mitigation that you are talking about.
Mm.
Now it's good that Memeletumbo is there.
Mm.
I think she was the first person to now craft up our national policy on climate change.
No, she came
and
with
the adaptation.
Yeah.
The time the Minister of Environment.
So it came that time, ne?
Our thing came a long time because it is,
oh.
I think Namibia is the first country to adopt that thing in their constitution about climate change and mitigation and what.
No, I remember that time when she was at the environment, ne?
Yes. So I don't think the many of these countries, they were, I don't know, I'm not sure, but
no, I think I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you. Then the question come, that policy, was it used right, in the right way? Was it, effective?
It has been reviewed. Now they should have a new one.
Yeah.
But it was after, you know, during the implementation, and that was the time that we were having problem now, even when we were drafting up our things. Because now NAMPOWER will tell you, hey, you are telling us about gender. Here we are technical people.
Mm-hmm.
I say, what? So we are technical. We don't have anything to do with gender. And there are many. Even when you go there, they will tell you, so we don't discriminate.
Yeah.
That kind of a language. But when you look at their programmings and all these programs and things like that, you say, how are the women featuring here? How are the men? How are the boys and girls? That's why you see some kind of imbalances in terms of implementing some of those developmentary plans and issues of that nature. But the coordination that you are talking about is very effective.
Yeah.
So they need to be emphasized. So issues of what is it that you were talking about, that you asked your questions. So that document came long time ago.
Uh-huh.
It's not that we are now just the, but otherwise we could be, some of this defect, we could have been populated them with plants already. When you cut one tree, plant how many?
10.
Yes, so now we don't do that, but the money is there for climate change. If you go to the environmental investment funds with agriculture and many other stakeholders, the money is just lying there, but we are not picking them. If you organize some of this use in your village there, and go to those agencies and say, yes, here we are, want to plant, want now to start making crops and whatever, agriculture and all these things.
Mm.
Now irrigation, you know, all these things. All those strategies are there, but we are not capitalizing on them.
I think, Uncle, you fit to be a development advisor. I think those are very good. those are very good initiatives. Especially, you know, you have money, you have people that are not working. Come up with a project and make sure that from that project, people also get something. Because this thing
they will not wait for hunger.
Yeah,
they are hungry.
Yeah.
You know what you do?
Yeah.
You just, now this time around, once you set up your face, that one, you now demand and say, yes.
Yeah.
UNICEF, What are you doing? You say you have a part here. Where is the what? Your assistant. Technical assistant, you get it there. Funding, you get it there.
Then you give because people something.
No, we are entitled to some of those things.
Yeah, even this thing of cleaning the city, we can't, yes, volunteering is needed, but if you see that there is a situation that need assistance, people can come. It's not their job. At least give people something so that they can move forward.
You know, the volunteers who are coming, the cops, you know, the cops, some of my people have worked with cops, my colleagues there.
Peace cops.
Cops from America.
Yeah, peace cops.
You know, the allowance that they get.
Yeah.
So they go in there, but you see, there is no one who can volunteer, volunteering yourself with your skill and everything, and go with empty hands, I mean, you know, empty stomach.
Yeah.
Doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So everybody has to come in, but it has to start at that point, volunteering yourself, putting your energy there, your effort, and there is no way because you are doing it for the purpose, and the purpose is to serve the community, to make a difference in the community, in the lives of the people. So why are you not going to be compensated for? Even if you call it a volunteering kind of a work. Thank you, Mr. David, for giving me an opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you for your input, and we always appreciate your view.
God bless.
Sharp, sharp. Yes. Can't volunteer without getting anything. At least give people something. If the government is struggling, we have a lot of young people. You can even just pick 100 of them. Then you give them something. Project can be completed. You have engineers at the bus there. Economists are there and everybody. So, hello.
Good morning.
Morning, sir. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
We
are talking about, is it environment protection or whatever?
Yeah, environment. Yeah, it's climate change and also environment.
Okay, let me keep in there. You know, nature conservation and all that's my cup of tea. That is the thing that I have. I love so much.
It's what you eat for lunch.
Yeah, but it's unfortunately, that is my profession actually. It's only that due to the circumstances, I had to quit that profession.
Yeah.
But I'm very touched to it yet.
Oh, okay.
The problem we have in this country, government is contradicting itself in many cases.
Okay, how?
You find that they are preaching about protecting environment, and yet they are giving prospecting licenses in nature conservation areas. For the mining and all that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it happens in this country, and it pains me more. You know, for instance, there's one area there in Kunene region. It's a conservancy where you find black rhinos and all that.
Yeah.
Yet the government is approving prospecting licenses and mining licenses in that area.
Oh, they found something there.
Probably yes. And remember the thing is, apart from the money that mining activity is bringing in the country, it's such a destructive activities. And once you uprooted the animals, rhinos, and from the bigger ones to the smaller ones, you uprooted them, they move away from other places where they are even going to fall in the hands of the poachers and all that. You know, the animal cannot regenerate.
But the
ones that they wiped out, that's why we have things like quahas and the blue bock that are extinct in this Southern African country. We never find them anywhere.
But it's especially the rhino part there is, we have to be very careful because it's few countries that have them.
Yeah. Let me, I just want to give you a scenario.
Not
a scenario, it's a reality.
Yeah. Now, what do you think needs to be done?
No, they must just stick to the, if they are there to protect the environment, let the mining activity take part in the other places, and leave the conservancy areas alone so that the animal can multiply and stay there to help the public that are there.
Before I let you go, I want your view regarding the education that, our children are getting, especially regarding environment. You find the teacher teaching environmental science, or can be even a teacher of agricultural geography, to say, no, do not cut down tree, don't do what, but it's just like formality. There's no really, practicality, just like formality to say, no, this one can do what. What do you think can be done to make sure that we understand the value of environment from primary education?
What is needed? The people's knowledge and know-how.
Yeah.
They must move around in community and teach them the importance of environment protection.
Mm-hmm.
If you say that don't cut trees, and you might find that probably I'm somebody who's working, earning a salary, but still I want, because of the traditional, I want a house that is made out of the trees, stumps, and all that. Because there are people who are still proud of that.
Yeah.
And I cannot have a house with a wall.
Yeah.
I cannot have a house with a zinc, whatever. You just want that.
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that need to be drummed into the heads of the people that, yes, it's a tradition.
Mm.
But now the time has changed. We should move on with time, and then let's protect the environment. Use the other material that cannot have a harm. I just want to give you a scenario. You know, back then, my parents got a farm east of Agwena region there. Before we moved in, it was 80s, 88, somewhere there.
Okay.
Before we moved in, the whole area was teemed with wildlife. You talk about eland, oryx, kudu, up to the dikas, warthog, and all that.
The kasongos.
But when the people move in, my friend.
Yeah.
They wiped out everything.
Everything.
Now, if you go there, if you are lucky, you find a dika and a porcupine. That's all. You will never see oryx, you will never see even a track of a land or whatever. And these are the things that people need to be taught about, the importance of protecting animals.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because
we have around 13 minutes. It's rare to find somebody who with knowledge and understanding of conservancy, especially this point in time. I want to ask you, there's a case which happened in South Africa where a millionaire from US was killed by a buffalo. He was known for this thing hunting.
Trophy hunting.
What is the necessity of trophy hunting? Is it part of business in tourism, or is it important?
Yeah, trophy hunting is also in a way, it's also a kind of helping the environment, protection of animals, because the money that is generated is going in the coffer of the conservation or the park owner, so that he can at least invest back. Mm-hmm. But it's not something that we need to make it. They just kill.
Yeah.
They don't even take the meat.
Oh.
They just they don't take the meat. The trophy hunter, they don't take the meat. Maybe you just need the skin, or you just need a head or head of animal or something.
To show that he was there.
The meat and money and everything he leave with you. But they generate, they come with to pay a lot of money. Let's say, for instance, elephant can even go up to a million.
Just trophy hunting?
Just trophy hunting, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but in a way, in some cases, you can say it's also because they don't normally shoot any animal. They shoot, they target probably the old ones and the bulls and the old ones.
Oh.
Yeah, and they leave the younger ones because the trophy hunting is regulated by the government.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You cannot just go there and shoot for trophy. No, you have to be registered with the ministry in that country and regulated. Even the government knows which type of animal you are going to shoot and all that. And yeah.
Okay. Who are we speaking to again?
It's Longo.
Oh, okay. Shilongo, thank you.
It's only that today my voice is somehow.
I see. Okay, thank you, Shilongo. I think I should invite you one day also in this program to interview, especially in that area, because we speak more on, but in the area of tourism economy, we don't really have people there who talk about tourism economy or issues of climate and all those things. But thank you for input once again.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
Bye.
Sharp. Yeah, thank you, Shilongo. Thank you. Could not recognize your voice, but yeah, thank you. We have around 10 minutes before we come to the end of our conversation. Talk about issues of climate, issues of development, how can we move forward? Do we have a good understanding of environmental protection? Do we have a good understanding of environmental protection? What is the economy of tourism? Is the economy of tourism, how to keep our natural resources intact, and also how to protect our environment. And there have been argument to say if you see a snake in the village, you don't even need to kill it, because a biologist will tell you that, no, you need a snake in a village for you to survive. You need flies, you need bees. But, you know, it's a very complicated area to understand, but one of the things that you cannot take away from is that nature is incomplete without microorganisms, without animals that you don't even see that they have purpose. There are research which are done to say if you do not have bees in on this earth, the lifespan of a human being or who have a certain years to live due to their contribution to the environment, But understanding of environment does not only require you to have a degree in environmental science or to do agricultural conservancy, but also understanding the pattern which is happening in the weather. Understand the indigenous knowledge to say when the elders is seeing some sign in the sky, there are predictions to say, no, it's going to rain. There are predictions. And you must understand those things to say. Knowledge is coming in different forms, but understanding the environment and also understand that Namibia has been faced by drought and flood, and most of these things were caused by, what we do as human beings, either directly or indirectly, knowingly or unknowingly, but the fact that we have experienced that we should not only focus on how to survive during flood, how to vacate people during flood, how to give them food during flooding season or during drought, but also how to prevent these things. Yeah, because economy without environment, it will not thrive, because environment is resources. And the resources must be handled very well. And people spoke about the issue of, we only focus on the money. No, we are going to move you here from here. Remove your graveyard. There is diamond underground, and destroying the environment. Then the mines, the investor go with their money. Then you live with a destroyed environment, which is difficult to recover. Do you know that people from China, Japan, when they come to Namibia, they are very happy. They are asking, you guys, you even have a blue sky. You know why they are asking that? To them, it's a luxury. Do you guys even have a blue sky? Just the fact that you wake up and look at the blue sky, just because you are still at the stage where you have a lot of quality which is left within your environment. People bend to their country. That's why you see a lot of tourists moving around Namibia. They come here to breathe. Just know that when they are coming to Namibia, they are coming here to breathe, because there's no fresh air where they are coming from. Because this thing of industrialization has really contaminated their airspace. Well, that's why when they are coming here, they are coming here to breathe. You see them go to Etosha. They are there resting. Go to Etosha. They are there resting, enjoying themselves. But it's only something that we can hold on for a very long time if we share knowledge. That's why we are always indicating to you that, with Every morning scoop, we discuss cutting across issues. We discuss issues of issues which are related to the economy, economy of tourism, economy of environment, and also issues which affect bread and butter issue. Because it's only from understanding bread and butter. It's only for understanding where, who is feeding you, who is making the food that you are eating, where are you going to get food, then you understand how the economy is working, because human operation depends, or effective human operation depends on the understanding of what, when, where, who has what, where, how to get it, and also how to live in harmony with each other. So, dear listeners, we have around 3 minutes before we come to the end of our conversation. And to look at what we discussed today, or to emphasize on what we discussed today, we touch on Tokyo International Conference on African Development, that Japan has indicated that she wants more, expand business and relationship with Africa. And also African leaders presented their proposals, their points, and also what they feel about Tokyo International Conference on African Development and what they would like to gain from that. It's a very big conference where the Secretary General of UN is also there. And just to look at what are the expected outcomes also. From there, we touch at environment. We touch at the issue of capacity building, which happened at International University of Management, especially regarding to respond to climate, changes. And in relation to that, issues of indigenous knowledge. What are some of the indigenous knowledge that can still be used when it's coming to environment, when it's coming to climate change, when it's coming to weather prediction, when it's coming to surviving of disasters, and also when it's coming to maintaining of relevant knowledge about issues. So we have touched that part, and it's also very, very crucial when we listen to the views of presenters, because this radio is yours. We cannot be here without you. That's why we are always very happy, especially when you give your contribution, you give your perspective. Because as I've been saying, it could be that you are a person who has more knowledge, you studied about a subject, then you can educate others more. Because you are not only talking to me, you are talking to the whole society, you are talking to Namibia. So that's why we are always encouraging constructive engagement. And yeah, I'm going to leave you in the good hands of Mike Oshoveri. To leave in the good hands of Mike Oshoveri with Unpacking the Day. And stay tuned, stay tuned. Just before we give to Mike, make sure that you download the Eagle FM app. Make sure that you download the Eagle FM app. Make sure that you also read the Villager newspaper. It's the one which is coming out tomorrow. And subscribe to 0812414144. Send your name and save that number. It's your WhatsApp contact. And you'll be able to receive the Villager newspaper every Monday, every Wednesday, and also every Friday. And yeah, download Imba app, so that you'll be able to have access to your hymn book. So from me, David Shombe, bye-bye, and see you next time.
From sunrise to supper time, Namib Mills is there, feeding the nation with care, quality, and heart.
We believe food is more than nourishment. It's dignity. It's hope. It's the start of a better tomorrow.
Through sustainable production processes, job creation, and affordable, nutritious food, Namib Mills is driving economic growth one plate at a time. Because when we say feeding the nation,
we mean uplifting lives,
empowering communities, and building a future where no one is left behind.
Namib Mills, proudly Namibian,
passionately feeding the nation.
Namib Mills, feeding the nation.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the app.